Welcome to the 2 Minutes Podcast presented by BioSteel. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall. Welcome back to the 2 Minutes Podcast presented by BioSteel. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall. Tonight, we have a very special guest. He's going to be helping us out behind the scenes, and sometimes you'll be hearing him on the mic too. He is making his debut with us tonight on the 2 Minutes Podcast. He's a good friend, a good mentor. He is also a good hockey player. He's a player coach with our hockey team. We'd like to welcome Lane Larson. Laner, how's it going?
It's good, Bosco. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries, man. No worries at all. It's a pleasure today on the podcast. Our big interview is with Craig Button, so that interview will come up very shortly for everyone. So really good insight from Craig. I guess kind of before we get into what you're all about and where you come from, Lane, what did you think of your first interview, and what did you think of the interview with Craig Button? Any kind of takeaways, anything that kind of stood out to you that meant a lot, or, you know, kind of, wow, that's pretty cool?
Oh, Craig's a great guy, and it was just it was really interesting to get to ask him questions about his career and you know, where he's been, some of the things he's seen, and, you know, even getting a little peek behind the curtain and seeing you know, some of the challenges and some of the successes that he's had, and just kind of getting to hear kind of his personal take on some of those.
Nice. Yeah, I know he's been on with us quite a bit, and he's always brings some good insight into the game and away from the game too. So it's always a pleasure. And this is about an hour interview with Craig, so we won't make you guys wait any longer, but we wanted to introduce you to our fans, Lane, and you know, kind of what's your background, you know, involved in the game. You know, you're one of the great ball hockey players here in Edmonton. I don't know. I never played ice hockey with you, so I don't know how much your ice hockey skills, but, you know.
I'll remember to bring the cash next time I see you. Thanks for
exactly.
Like most, a lot of kids born up here, you know, been skating since I was little, and, you know, played all the way up through to midget, played Southside back in the day, and but then found ball hockey not long after that ended, and just, I fell in love, and it's my favorite thing to do. It's great to get out with the boys and get a run in. And it's some of the, you know, things we've done and things we've won. It's been wonderful. We actually, you know, I've ended up winning a medal at every level. Got a city, provincial, Western Canada, and a national gold medal. So pretty proud of all those. Maybe one day, you know, this age, maybe get to join the Masters team, maybe go to Worlds, but That's that'd be kind of the cherry on top, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, exactly. It would be pretty sweet. Yeah, no, so Lane's going to be helping us out kind of behind the scenes, doing some business stuff. He's going to kind of help out in some of the contracts that we're taking on here and some sponsorships. And if anyone's listening and looking at, joining in and wanting to take part in being a sponsor with us, Lane will kind of be the ones guiding you guys through that process. And we're moving up in the rankings. We're very grateful. As we sit today, we're ranked 41 in all of Canada for Hockey Podcast. Our highest ranking was 2 years ago at number 14. And we appreciate the Two Mods Podcast Nation joining in and supporting this our journey, and bringing you guys some great insight and covering the game, and bringing you some of the greatest guests that we can get our hands on, and all that. And before we jump to the interview with Craig, is there something that you're pretty excited about joining in on this journey? And at times you'll be on the mic, a lot of times you'll be doing some stuff behind the scenes, but is there something you're intrigued to hear? Obviously, connecting with some of these people is always pretty sweet, but your thoughts on kind of where it goes for you here.
Well, Bosco, I think, right now you just touched on it. We're in such a great place to, I think, really, just grow the Two Mutts. And so excited to see how that goes. And, I think sponsors are really going to want to get involved with that, just with where we're going and what we've been doing. That they like the guests lately have been fantastic, from Button Today and, John Scott and Doug McLean and all these guys, Elliot Friedman's, but like there's just it's just been it's been great to have these guys on. I think, 2 months is really going to be going from here. And me personally, I really enjoy just getting to know a little bit more about these people and some of their experiences. I think the stories that they have just about where they've been and what they've done is some of the interesting things that maybe the 2 months can touch on a little bit more and get into. And really excited about that and for the future of what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. It's you got a great business mind. I can learn a lot from you, and that's why I wanted to kind of bring you on. But you're also a great mentor when it comes to covering the game. And like Phil had said before, it's always I'll play on a team Lane runs any day of the week, because you're going to get a lot out of it. You're going to leave the game learning more about it. And Craig kind of attests to that towards the end, and people can hear that. We won't want to spoil it, but meant a lot to kind of bring you on, and we just got to work out some Zoom stuff. But the whole point is this, so we can find a place to do this live and in person together. And so we don't have to do everything off Zoom, because that's all been taken care of. But anyways, anything you want to say before we jump to our interview with Craig Button?
Oh man, they don't want to hear us anymore. Let's get to it.
Okay, perfect. All right. Everyone enjoy our interview with Craig Button. It's coming up right now. So we'll catch you guys in a few episodes, next episode. But here's our interview with Craig Button from TSN.
The Two Mutts Podcast is brought to you by Free Bars. And Free Bars are arguably the best tasting energy bar. You might have heard Free Bars on the podcast before, and maybe you've tried them at Edmonton's most popular farmers markets. Free Bars focus on three main things for their bars. One, Free Bars are free of priority allergens, including peanuts, nuts, dairy, eggs, gluten, and soy. Second, Free Bars taste great. I was talking to Luke, the man behind Free Bars, and the comments they get while sampling is always positive. Everyone loves how they taste. Three, they are full of healthy and whole ingredients, nothing artificial and no preservatives. Free Bars are made right here in Edmonton, and they are quickly popping up in stores around the city. Free Bars use a mixture of hemp hearts, honey, and gluten-free oats as their base. And then there are the three flavors: chocolate chip, mint chocolate chip, and the popular coconut. Free Bars' list of ingredients is short. Like in the coconut, there's just hemp hearts, honey, gluten-free oats, shredded coconut, and coconut oil. That's it. As school gets back into the swing of things and hockey season starts, parents and kids are bringing Free Bars to the rink as a healthy, delicious snack. Want to try? Listeners of this podcast will get 20% off with the promo code TWOMUTTS. That's one word, TWOMUTTS, and the discount will be applied at checkout. Learn more about Free Bars by visiting us at Strathcona's Farmers Market. Bountiful Farmers Market, and St. Albert Farmers Market, or online at freebars.ca. Want to pick it up at the store? Check out freebars.ca for a full list of our realtors. Don't forget the promo code, Two Mutts, and have arguably the best tasting energy bar today. That's Free Bars.
Mutts fans, our next guest works for TSN as a TSN hockey analyst, and he is also their director of scouting. And you can find him with Steve Koulias. They have a podcast called Cool Buttons Podcast. We'd like to welcome back to the Two Mutts Podcast, Craig Button. Butts, how's it going?
It's going good. On the Mutts on the Mutts.
Yeah, exactly. Mutts on the Mutts, exactly. So, yeah, we got Lane making his Two Mutts Podcast debut. It's he's getting some rookie laps in, so we'll give him a grading at the end, Craig, and see what how good he does, eh?
Yeah, oh yeah, we can do that. So the first thing you got to do is turn off your video so he's out there by himself, right?
Yeah.
So he's got to go for that lap by himself.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to go a couple laps. No pucks though, Lane, eh? So
yeah,
right. you can go no bucky. You don't have to wear a bucket. So right. But yeah, Craig, how are things with you? Kind of winding back down. I know it's always busy with you, but how was the World Junior experience and being back home in Calgary here?
Yeah, well, I mean, the World Junior experience this year was fantastic. You know, I think it was in the right place, and the communities of Halifax and Moncton. I mean, to be there, I mean, and watch the hockey was terrific. But it was the fans, it was the passion, it was the communities in and around it that made it. I'll be straightforward with you. I would never go back to Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, or Montreal for a World Junior tournament. I'd go to Winnipeg, I'd go to Ottawa, which are NHL cities because of what's around them and everything. But I would never go back to an NHL market, or I wouldn't do it for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, I think that hockey connects communities across this country. I know that that the World Junior in 2017, there was 11,000 people in the building for the gold medal game. There was 11,300 in the building in Halifax for the gold medal game. And, you know, we see how junior hockey plays out in the big NHL cities. It just doesn't play. And you know what? They'll come and watch Team Canada, which is great, but the rest of it, and it's great hockey on display, great passion for the hockey. And it was just a fantastic event. And, you know, after August and then the bubble, it got postponed, and in the previous bubble, it felt like there was a normalcy to the World Junior again,
yeah,
in terms of timing and the enthusiasm with the fan bases.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And I was listening to the guys on Overdrive today, and Jeff O'Neill was obviously talking about that and how much it means to being in those smaller markets. And I don't know if there's a big appetite to get back. I know somewhat there is for the cash that it brings to those bigger cities. But what was great about it for me is almost every single game you saw, Craig, it was full. Doesn't matter which teams were playing, right? So I think that was really, really awesome.
Well, I'll tell you something. So this is the problem. Like, you understand why the cash is, and you miss all the other important things.
Yeah.
You know, connecting communities. If we're going to just diminish the communities that aren't NHL size, then we're gonna lose those connections. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you this: I before the gold medal game, they have to clear everybody out, the bronze medal. It's unbelievable the coordination they had in getting everything cleaned up. So then the fans start to come in. Hundreds of kids are running to get to the runway where Team Canada comes on the ice. They got their signs. They got everything going on with the signs and wanting to get a glimpse of the players. Now, let me tell you this. That was the same way in every single game that I was at. I was at all the games in Moncton, games in Alpha. That's how it was. Games sold out. Kids with their signs. The players interacting with it. So if you just wanted to make it about cash, then just go play in the Sky Dome then.
Yeah.
Go play in the Sky Dome. And you're going to miss all the key parts of what this tournament means. And to me, the important parts of what Hockey Canada needs to do. Their job is to get kids interested in hockey. That's their number one goal. And when you see the kids there and they're involved, outdoor rinks, outside the rinks, they're skating and everything, that's what it's about. If you want to make it about cash, don't waste your time then. Go play in the Sky Dome.
Yeah. No, it's very well said. I agree, because you guys say it a lot on the broadcast too, right? Like, you know, Gord talks about it a lot. It's like some of those countries that are coming here and some of those kids, that's the biggest venue, the biggest crowds are going to play in front of, you know, and the meaning to that for them means a lot, you know? So I definitely agree with you on that for sure. I like it. Craig's fired up to get going here. It's awesome.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, I'm fired up. Like, you know, I am fired up. you see, again, like, it's great, you know, kids have the Hockey Canada jersey on and the Maple Leaf, and it's wonderful. But it's about them feeling that they are connected to hockey.
Yeah.
Greg, you've traveled to some of the World Junior tournaments outside of Canada as well, correct?
Oh, yeah. I've seen World Junior tournaments in all the countries around the world.
And how have some of the smaller countries, like, the attendance, I'm assuming, is a little less than it is here?
It depends where you are. I know in Malmo, it was fantastic. Malmo was 2014, was fantastic. Helsinki in 2016 was really, really good. Ostrava and Friedrich Mystic in Czechia was really good in 2020. So there is a buildup with the tournaments over there. Yeah. And, you know, but like, I'll tell you this, Lane, is that this tournament, in terms of enthusiasm and community involvement, there might have been some tournaments that were as good, not mm-hmm. better, right. And better anywhere, not in any country anywhere. Right. And I've been to games where I've seen 100 people in the building for a quarterfinal match. You know, wow. If their country isn't playing, that wasn't the case. That wasn't the case here. And I think that, you know, the game is growing, the television audiences. I mean, we know what the television audiences are in Canada, and they're terrific.
Yeah.
They're double that in the other countries.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that might be a little less now with Russia not being involved. But, you know, like I can tell you, Latvia was tagged into to Slovakia, Czechia, Sweden, Finland. I mean, all those countries are Switzerland. They're all tapping in to the Germany. They're all tapping into the broadcast. So TSN is the official broadcaster of the IIHF. So they're feeding it all over there. So when we get a number of 3 million, you know, watching a Canada game of 3.5 million, well, there's double that watching that in around the world. So the growth in the tournament has been tremendous.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely is. Before we go to some CHL news here, Craig, I just want to get some comments. You and I, kind of when we connected here in the summertime, we talked about the importance of Cheryl Pounder to the broadcast and how much she's meant, you know, and what she brings to the table for you guys. Can you speak to the fans and, you know, kind of open up a little bit more of, you know, how great of an asset she's been with you guys on the panel? Not only on the NHL coverage, but especially on the World Junior side and the women's side of hockey too.
Well, I mean, she's doing the U18 tournament right now. That's coming from Sweden. So she jumps straight from the World Junior tournament right into the U18 tournament, does the rivalry series before the World Junior tournament, does NHL games before that. I mean, her passion for hockey is second to none. Her knowledge is second to none. Her understanding of the game and her ability to express it, second to none. I mean, you watch, you spend time with somebody, and you, and the fans watch. I spend time with Cheryl, and I mean, her enthusiasm has no limits, and that comes across. Then you think about her experience, an Olympian, a gold medalist. She coaches her daughters and coaches hockey. I mean, she is so invested and so knowledgeable and great. That's what she is. She's great. She's a great person. She's great on TV. She's great at, like, in whether she be on a panel or whether she be in the color commentary position, she's great. I mean, quite frankly, she's a superstar. That's what she is. She's a superstar. And, you know, when you get a game changer like that, that makes everybody better around her, and then the entire presentation that much better, I mean, you celebrate it, and you celebrate it to the nth degree.
Yeah. You said it the best in the summer when we connected there, is, because she was doing the same thing in the summertime that she's doing now, you know, with all the rigorous schedule. But you, if you're going to succeed in this industry, you got to grind. And, you know, and what you do, getting in those rinks and checking out all the games you can, from NHL to CHL, NCAA hockey, and seeing what she's doing on that is just amazing. And obviously, I think she's been a huge hit. A great get for TSN, and it's great for the viewers. And I like that she's getting her respect, especially, you know, seeing the tweets online and whatnot. And, you know, Twitter can be a tough place at times, but the beautiful part of it is getting the recognition that she rightfully deserves. So,
yeah, well said, Josh, because she rightfully deserves it. I mean, bottom line is that, you know, when you think about, you know, she brings such a global perspective. And when I say global, what I'm talking about, playing at an Olympic level, you know, national team, you know, understanding you know what it's like to coach young kids. So she's connected to youth, right? She's connected to the NHL game. She can take you into what it feels like to defend against a top quality forward. And I don't care if you're playing in the women's game or the men, when you're facing a top quality forward that can challenge you in a different way, you can talk about that. And Cheryl talks about that brilliantly. And then when you speak to her enthusiasm and her work ethic and her passion, I mean, it just puts her right over the top. And you want to be around people like that. She's infectious. Yep. She's infectious, because the other thing that, that she does is because she works so hard and she brings it, you want to jump on there and you don't bring your A game, oh, you're going to be exposed real quick.
Yeah, she will do that. So great to see. And anyone listening in, catch her on TSN there. She is she's a wonderful, wonderful person.
She does have a fault, though.
What that be?
She has a fault. You know what? She roots for Michigan State.
Oh, I thought you know, we were going to go down that road.
No, she roots for Michigan State, you know, and I'm a Michigan guy. And her husband went and played at Michigan State, and I get it, her husband, Mike. Yeah. But, like, that doesn't mean you automatically just jump over there. And you know, so from my perspective, that's her only fault or flaw, I would say. But you know what? I kind of forgive her.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We'll move on to some CHL news, Craig, here. And the trades that we're seeing in the trade deadline in the CHL, it's crazy for me. I don't know. I'm not a parent, but if I was a parent, for some reason, I'd feel concerned, you know, if my kid got drafted by, you know, said organization, and all of a sudden he's involved in one of the, you know, those big trades that we've seen. And obviously Owen Zellweger was one of the big ones, and Dylan Gunther just got traded. But this has been a theme for a while now, but I just want to get your thoughts on what you think is going on in the CHL game here with these big trades. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it fair? Is it not fair? But where do you stand on this?
You know, many years ago, I remember sitting with Bob Gainey, and Bob Gainey said, you know, the CHL is just the mini NHL. You know, you have teams that are trying to win, and you have trades, and we think about it and we go, you know, why should 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids be traded like professionals? And, you know, I think about, are we just conditioning them for the NHL? Are we just conditioning them for an NHL life? You know, we talk about it being a development league, right, in terms of hockey, but you know, it seems to me that we're also conditioning them, you know, for the realities of professional life, that you may be traded. The challenge that I have when you're not a professional is, you know, are you just going to be somebody that doesn't have any loyalty? You know, you're just expecting to be traded. Why would I go there? You know, they're just going to trade me. And, you know, loyalty works both ways. And I worry about, you know, kids, young players, young people. You know, they're not just integrating to a team. They're integrating in the community. They're integrating in that school. And you know, you're trying to build up relationships at a time in your life where you're trying to find yourself. You're trying to mature off the ice as much as you are on the ice. So I think it has a real material effect on people. And I think the effect that it has can vary between people. You know, Olin Zelliger, and I'm just picking Olin Zelliger. I mean, he's 19 years old. He's well on his way to an NHL, to an NHL professional career. So it might be different for him. It may be different for Dylan Gunther. I mean, you know, I was in Edmonton. I get to go to Seattle. But, you know, for the other players, you know, not the star players, not the players that are moving, that everybody wants that you're giving up in a trade. I think those are the ones, you know that I get concerned about. And I know in the OHL, you can't trade a kid without every kid coming into the OHL, as long as they're in school, high school, they have a no trade. You can't trade them unless they agree to it. But that also creates its own complications too. Because now, you know, let's say I come to you and I say, Josh, we want to trade you. Well, I'm not waiving my no trade. Like, are they going to respect that? Are they going to be mad at you? How do you feel about the whole thing? And, you know, lots of draft picks get traded. The next part of this is what happens to the next group of kids coming in to the teams that have no first or second round picks for the next 25 years? Yeah. What's their experience going to be like? You know, they're going to get drafted, right? And like a top kid might be able to say, I'm not going there, right? But other kids are going, well, that's where I got to go. How's their development going to be affected?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of consequences to it. And I don't know what the answer is. I really don't know what the answer is. You know, you're trying to be competitive. You're trying to win. I understand that. But it just seems that it's moving along a path that's become more and more extreme. You know, 9 picks being traded. Yeah. You know, kids, the pick is for kids that are 11 years old, you know, like ostensibly when they're, you know, yep. If you want to look at the time they'll be drafted. So, you know, I think the leagues have worked really hard to try to create a stability. But I think in these cases at the trade deadline, there's a measure of instability that has immediate consequences and long-term consequences.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a very concerning, and you know, obviously there's a lot to weigh in that when it comes to, you know, the family members and you know, all that, and the kids, and you know, like you say, they're. The biggest part about junior hockey is growing the roots that you're a part of, right? You know, that's the billet families. It's the giving back. It's a lot of charitable work, a lot of community work that they're doing, you know, and yes, all these big name players are moving, but a big name player that did not want to get moved. And that was Connor Bedard, and his first game back was lights out. And I think there's get your thoughts on Connor Bedard, but kind of the person too, where he probably doesn't want to get traded. Obviously it would mean a lot for the organization to be a part of that at the NHL draft, where you know their name is attached to Connor Bedard's name if he goes first overall, which we all think he will and he should go. But you know, thoughts on him and the individual he is. We kind of saw in the interview after the World Juniors Championship is that he didn't want to talk about himself too, Craig.
You know, I mean, what you see with Connor is what you get. I mean, Connor. I mean, it was interesting in the fall, leading into winter. John Paddock was asked a number of times. So I'm not answering your questions anymore. He doesn't want to be traded. We're not trading. Well, you know, here we arrived. We arrived at today, and Connor Bedard is a Regina Pat. I think that you know the process of Connor Bedard applying for exceptional status and the interviews and all the process when you feel comfortable that he can handle the rigors, you know, and the involvement once he's granted it with the franchise to ensure that you can set him up to grow and develop and to have success and whatnot. I think that Connor feels that Regina's done that. They've done that at every turn. So, you know, now at this point in time, he says, why would I want to just turn my back on that? Just what we talked about. Connor says, listen, I came there as a 15-year-old boy. And, you know, here I am, you know, 3 seasons later. And I know the pandemic played a part in some of those seasons being shorter. But he feels that, like, hey, like I said, loyalty is a two-way street here. Like, if John Paddock and the Regina Pats just said, ah, we can get a boatload for this guy. Well, no kidding, you can get a boatload for him, right? But, like, now what happens to the next players that say, well, know, I'm not going to be loyal to you. Get me out of here or whatnot. I think Connor Bedard is a shining example of, hey, listen, we make an agreement. I'm coming there. I expect things from you. You expect things from me. Okay, we reach this point. We're all happy. I don't need to leave.
Yeah.
And I got asked the question, Josh, you know, does winning, having not won in Regina, you know, impact, you know, maybe how NHL teams view them? I said, only if the NHL teams are completely stupid.
Very true.
Talking Connor Bedard there, how would you personally rank his World Junior performance compared to some of the other ones you've seen?
Lane, I kept going through it, and the last time I saw a player of this age, keep in mind, other players at 19, Peter Forsberg in 1993 had a dominant performance, and you know, but it wasn't more dominant than Connor Bedard.
Right.
You come into Team Canada, number one, it's hard to make Team Canada as a 7-year-old. Secondly, it's really hard to have a prominent role on Team Canada as a 7-year-old. And thirdly, it's really hard to be the best player by far coming into the tournament on Team Canada as a 7-year-old. And he was all of those things. And then he was the best player in the tournament coming into it. And he separated himself even further from every other player during it. I kept saying, Lane, that I haven't seen a performance by a player at this age since Wayne Gretzky did it at the 1978 World Junior Tournament.
Oh,
the funny thing about it is, that's the last time. Jaromir Jagr, as a 7-year-old, was really good in 1990. Robert Reichel, his line mate, was the best player. It wasn't Jaromir Jagr. Like Connor Bedard, it wasn't even close to nobody was close to him. Not even close. Nobody. And, you know, like Gretzky, people want to sit down and say, what about his skating? How big is he and everything? And you know what? When I kept comparing him and comparing that performance and I've seen everything else he's done, that's a generational player. I was reluctant. I wanted to be careful about applying that thing. But leading into the gold medal game, you know, the semifinal, we talked about it. I just said, I'm straddling a line. I'm not straddling it anymore. he has clearly established himself as a generational player from the minute he walked into the WHL and right up until his last game, which happened to be on Sunday when he obliterated with, you know, 13 shots on goal, 4 goals, 2 assists. You know, all he has done is dominate at every single turn. All he has done is dominate from the first time to the last time and everywhere in between at every level.
This public service announcement is brought to you by our friends at CDN. Here's a crazy thought. Not all teamwear needs a team logo. Stand out in the crowd and rep your team colors with one of CDN's hockey hats. Listen, these hats are phenomenal. We just got ours a little while ago, and we've been wearing them nonstop. You know when you find a hat you love and you just can't take it off? Yep, that's how we feel with our CDN hat. Every time we wear it out, we get asked, where did you get that hat? I know what you're thinking. How can I get one? Cue the details. Shop online 24/7 at www.wearecdn.ca and use the promo code 2MUTS for 15% off your order. Again, that's www.wearecdn.ca to get your new favorite hat and use the discount code 2MUTS at checkout for 15% off your order. Now back to the show. Coach Rupper here from 2MUTS. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. Now let's grab a knee. Have I got a deal for you? We have teamed up with Manscaped and we can save you some big time coin this upcoming NHL season. Guys, are your sticks and pucks getting hairy in the corners? And gals, is your goalie still using horsehair Coopers? Well, let's wake up! Use the code 2MUTS to save 20% plus free shipping on Manscaped products. Listen, we all love to score and we all want to win the cup. Why not do it on a fresh, clean, smooth sheet of ice? That way we all win.
Manscaped is the only way to go. Again, the code is 2MUTS to save 20% plus free shipping on Manscaped products. Now let's bring it in. Manscaped on three. One, two, three.
The 2MUTS podcast is presented by BioStill. Use promo code 2MUTSPOD25, that's 2MUTSPOD25, all capitals, to get 25% off your order at checkout when you go to BioStill.ca. Also, the 2MUTS podcast is presented by SeatGeek. Use promo code 2MUTSPOD, all capitals, that's 2MUTSPOD, to get $20 off your purchase at checkout.
Yeah. You know, speaking of junior teams, Craig, I got to ask you, why did the Israeli junior team never make the World Juniors?
probably because, at key areas of their development time, they had a coach that wasn't very good. So
I got to ask you, how did you let them down. The head coach of the Israeli junior team?
Well, a friend of mine, Alan Maislin, who was very involved with Israeli hockey and out of Toronto, and Maislin Trucking is a pretty significant mid-sized trucking company in Montreal, but he is very passionate about hockey, loved hockey. The person that was coaching it at the time had some work obligations. So Alan asked me if I would step in and help. And I said, absolutely, I did. Yeah. One of the greatest experiences of my life.
Oh, I'm sure.
We went from Winnipeg to Chicago to New York City, Montreal, back into Toronto. And these young players, you know, different ages, and to hear their background and to hear their goals and also to hear some of their fears, you know, like, you know, going forward. I mean, everybody in Israel has to serve. Every young person has to serve in the military and give it up. I mean, you know, they come to a different place with respect to their maturity sooner than others because of the reality of their geographical situation and quite frankly, some of the hate that's directed to them from their surrounding neighbors in the Middle East. But you know, for me, it was just an unbelievable experience. You know, to be able and to be able to see how they were treated in the communities. People were genuinely excited to see them, you know, in their communities and to wear the jersey with the Israeli flag and on it. I mean, there was people that had tears because they were so proud of what these young men represented. So for me to have been part of that, honestly, one of the highlights of my life.
Wow, that's great, and I'm sure those boys really appreciated having that experience as well with you. And then from there, you got on with the North Stars. Is that correct?
Well, I was with when I did the Israeli national junior team. I actually wasn't working in the NHL. Yeah. It was after I was finished with the Flames and the Leafs. I was doing a little bit of media work at that time when Alan asked me to do that. But when I finished university is when I ended up going to the North Stars. And, you know, I Jack Ferreira, who had worked with my father, had asked me a few times when he was with the Rangers if I wanted to do part-time work. I said, no, I was in university. We're having a grand old time. We used to go into Molson beer tournaments on the weekend, me and my friends, and we were having fun. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah,
I wrote him a congratulatory note, and he asked me if I'd be interested, and I was hemmed, and I don't know if I hemmed, but I paused, and you know what? He was great to me. You know, I did it. He said, if it doesn't work out, you know, you can go back to banking, which is where I was headed. But I ended up being really lucky. I mean, our assistant general manager at that time was Dean Lombardi. Les Jackson, who outside of my parents has had a profound influence on me, and I got lucky for him to be a great mentor and a great friend. And then, you know, you end up working with, you know, Bob Clark comes in, Bob Gainey comes in, Jim Lights, we moved to Dallas. I mean, I pinched myself, Lane. thinking about how lucky I, because these aren't things that you just get to go and pick. These are things that you're in a place and people start populating your world. And then while they're in your world, you go, oh boy, am I ever lucky to be here? And quite frankly, I got lucky.
We're talking about luck, because we had Doug McLean on a little while ago, and he says that since 67, the original six, there's only been about 210 GMs in the NHL. So how does it feel being one of the people that have one of the rarest jobs on the planet?
Yeah, well, I mean, you feel proud. I mean, I think Lane, I mean, you aspire. When I started out in hockey, I wasn't thinking about being a GM. I really wasn't. I mean, I always joked that kids in Canada, kids anywhere, you don't grow up dreaming about being a GM. You dream of being a player. That's what we do, you know.
Game 7 overtime.
Yeah, that's what we're all doing, right? So, you know, but like you work with people and you start to get a little bit more responsibility and you start to, you know, work in different areas and you start to go, okay, you know, this is interesting. You try to master that. But when you get an opportunity, like when I got the opportunity and to interview for a job, I was like, wow, okay, this is pretty cool. And then you get the job and I think it, while you're in the job, you're just doing it. But I think when you step away from doing the job, you realize the magnitude of what it means. You know, I just talk about community and everything. And coming to Calgary, which is a Stanley Cup champion city and a franchise that's great and a city where the people love their Flames and love their hockey, you know, you realize you have a much greater responsibility than just, you know, being a manager of a NHL team. But you're humbled by it. Make no mistake about it. I mean, to this day, I'm humbled by it. And, you know, to think that, you know, I had an opportunity to do it, that, you know, some of the things you did were positive. Like any manager, there's things you look back on and go, I wish I didn't do that, but I do.
Is Marty St. Louis on that list?
Well, I mean, the Marty St. Louis story has been blown so out of proportion. It's frightening. Because Marty St. Louis was lost in it, like as a free agent.
For sure.
So, I mean, the whole thing is, I was the manager. He wasn't protected. Nobody picked him up in the expansion draft. He signed as a free agent. And you know what? Marty St. Louis is the one that deserves a ton of credit. If people at the time would have said, you know, what are you doing here? Why aren't you making sure to protect Marty St. Louis? You know, then you can put it on my shoulders and you can pin me on it, right? But, like, it's been such a misrepresented story. And, you know, again, like Marty St. Louis is an unbelievable person. He's a Hall of Famer. He went and found his way, and good on him. And he did it when he was 25 years of age. And it wasn't even it took him a few years even then. But, like, you know, you think about a Hall of Fame career that really began when he was 26, 27. Yeah. It's so impressive. And he deserves the credit. And, you know, again, like, you know, I believe as a manager, when you're the manager, you're accountable for everything under your watch. So I guess somebody's like, in hindsight, you can come back in and go, yeah, I should have kept Marty St. Louis, but that wasn't the reality of it. You know, he went on, but you know what? All I know is this: lots of 32 teams could have had him. Well, 31, 30 teams could have had him. 30 teams had him, and nobody. Was clamoring to get Marty St. Louis at that time.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate you sharing that. It's one of the, you know, reasons I asked you about it, was getting a little bit of a look behind the scenes, right? Like you said, 30 teams had the chance, and he really built it from that opportunity, right? And actually, you know what?
He did.
Speaking behind the scenes, why don't you just take a minute? I'd love to know what your favorite part of being a GM was, and probably what the hardest part was.
The hardest part was managing expectations of people who didn't have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. Oh yeah. That, like, you know, people that had a lot of say, people that, you know, that's upper management ownership. Right. And, you know, it's great. Like it's wonderful. And I'm not saying that as a criticism, but part of that is, you know, you got to manage their expectations, but you know, when there's so much going on, and when I came into the Flames Forever campaign to keep the team here in place was right on. And, you know, Harley Hotchkiss and Murray Edwards and Doc Seaman, I mean, these are great, great people that give so much to the community and have been wildly successful. Not only, I mean, Doc and Harley and BJ were part of the Stanley Cup team in 1989, brought the Flames here. But, you know, I understand when your team is struggling and you haven't made the playoffs and the economic system is really difficult. And so when I said managing expectations when people around you, you know, don't have realistic expectations and they want to fast forward things, you know, that was something that I didn't do a very good job of, to be honest with you, Lane. That was something that I learned.
Me and Bosco live in Edmonton, so we understand unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, but you know, but like at that time, you know, when you're writing checks and you're trying to and you're losing players and you want to be competitive and you can't do it, right?
Yeah.
And you think that, you know, these young players are all going to do it and everything, and you're trying to say, listen, we got to do this in the right way and we're going to build and it's going to take. But when you've missed the playoffs four seasons and you missed the playoffs five seasons and your revenues are going down and your stakeholders are you know, key stakeholders, speaking of sponsors and everything, are putting pressure on you. Oh, well, we don't want to be part of this if you're not going to make the playoffs and the team isn't any good. That's what I mean. And yeah. It's just you come into a job knowing the hockey part of it, but there's a whole other part of managing it that becomes really, really substantial. And I take full blame there. It's something I didn't do very well. Yeah, you know, it's something that I think I learned and tried to and got better at. But you know what? There was some things where, you know, I didn't do a good enough job. So when I talk about that, you know, managing the different expectations of people, maybe unrealistic was the wrong word, but the different expectations and just trying to get everybody aligned. I think the best thing about it is the best part of the job is seeing people thrive. And whether it be young players, whether it be older players, you know, seeing people thrive and people looking to you and believing that you can help them thrive. And that's not just on the ice. That's in a lot of different areas. And to me, that is one of the best things. That was one of the best things about the job. I got a letter from a player that played on our American Hockey League championship team in 2001. I don't know when he sent it to me. He sent it to me about 10 years after that. And he thanked me. He never got to the NHL, but he thanked me because he said, I always felt like that I mattered as much as any player down there, that I was given every opportunity to be the best player I could be. That to me is something that I will never forget, because that's what you want to provide for people, an opportunity for them to be the best they can be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that really speaks even to just your character, you know, even going back to the Israeli junior team and then, you know, that getting letters like that, I think that's great. And so from there, you moved into broadcast, and I got to ask you, did you ask them or did they ask you?
No, they asked me. Yeah. So between my stint in Calgary, the end of my stint in Calgary, I did a year with the Score. And that was the year the Flames went to the finals. So I was around, and I was around a lot. Now, keep in mind that as a manager, I spent a lot of time in the media, and I spent a lot of time with media people in Canada specifically. So, you know, I knew people and everything. And then I went and worked for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So obviously, you know, that's a pretty big center and whatnot. And then when my time with the Leafs came to an end, you know, the NHL Network was up and running. I had the experience as a manager, scouting. And so I was given an opportunity, and TSN the same way, you know, and it didn't start out like that. It just was like, okay, you know, we'll give you some opportunity here. And I just kept nipping away at it. And before I knew it, I had a lot more on my plate. And I can only tell you this, Lane, is that they've continued to ask me to do it. So I'm happy.
You're doing
thrilled.
A good job.
So, you know, like I love doing it. I love trying to offer perspective. I love offering analysis. I love offering opinion. And like, I have a great job where I get to do a lot of different things, and Variety works really well for me. It really works. I get junior hockey, I get scouting, I get international hockey, I get NHL hockey, I get panel work, I get booth work. So for me, it just, for my personality, it works really nice. And the opportunities that I've been afforded are ones that I'm incredibly thankful for.
That is, you're one of the best in the game, Craig. And, you know, it's been always a pleasure when we can get you on. And we'll move over to some NHL stuff before we get you out of here. You know, we'll, it was a rough night last night for the Edmonton Oilers, Craig, and it's always a hot button topic, no pun intended, but you know, in what's going on with the Oilers organization. A lot of questions I got today when I a few of my friends knew that you were coming on, and kind of the statement was, how does it work? You know, you got Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, they're unbelievable players. They're ultra competitive. But you know, Jay Woodcroft in some of his press conferences, in some of, I agree with some of the fan kind of things they're saying, like, it's almost like he's watching two different games. And I understand maybe he's got to paint a different picture to the media than he probably does behind closed doors. But what have you thought of Jay Woodcroft's season to date as a head coach for the Edmonton Oilers?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. And, you know, you look at different aspects of a coach. So Jay came in last year and, you know, it ended up being pretty significant, right? I think Jay has had his own struggles this year. I think Jay is like Jack Campbell. He's had his good, his bad, and his ugly. Yeah. And he's like the Oilers' defense. Like, you know, there's nights where you go, it's really good. And other nights where you go, oh, doesn't look so good. Is that to be expected? Listen. He's a first-time head coach. He doesn't even have one full year in the league yet. So, you know, you have to understand that. He's learning. He's growing. But with it comes a lot of growing pains. He's no different than a young player. He's no different than somebody coming in that's expected to produce and, you know, contribute to a good team. And, you know, okay, yeah, this worked out well. And now, okay, I got to find solutions to that. And so, you know, Ken Holland is committed to him for 3 years. That's the contract he got. So, Jay's a bright guy. He's green. He's green. And when you're green, you're going to make mistakes. And I think there's no question that he would be the first one to acknowledge that there's some mistakes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, and you hear this all the time in any type of leadership, just be authentic. Just be authentic. Everybody can spot somebody that's not authentic from far away. And you know what? Like, you got Connor McDavid, who's your captain, wired in competitively, Draisaitl, Hyman, you know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, Darnell Nurse, they're all wired in. So, you know, when you're struggling, say we're struggling, acknowledge the mistakes. I think when you make a mistake, you come in. Like, you know, one of the things that really caught me after I think it was after the game last night, when he talked about the penalty kill, like, and when a coach starts to separate himself from the team, and he said, like, the penalty kill's got to step up. Oh, the penalty kill. Like, oh, they have to step up. Coaches, if coaches don't nip that in the bud, they lose the credibility with the group. You want to start separating yourself from the team and from different areas of the team, you're going to get yourself in big trouble. Yeah. When I heard that from Jay, I said to myself, if I was a manager, I'd be right down there, right on him, right on him.
Yeah.
That ain't going to cut it. And
he's had a few of those this year though, Craig.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you. So, So bottom line is you that's how you lose credibility though.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And so somebody's got to tell him. That's what I'd be saying. That's where I'd be. Hey, you better watch it. Because once that credibility erodes, ooh, it becomes harder and harder to regain it.
Have you seen or heard, or could it happen where, you know, that is addressed also with your leadership core going up to your coach after they've heard that, like a Connor McDavid, a Leon Draisaitl, or as you just said, that's probably more of the manager to do that?
No, I'm just telling you what I would do as a manager.
Yeah.
I think as a leadership group, like, you know, good leadership groups come in and shut the door and go, hey, what was that all about? You know what? Oh, it's the penalty kill, right? Well, you know what? Like, like when a mistake is made, are we all in it together, or are we going to get separated? When things don't go well, are we going to get separated? Like, bottom line is that there's all kinds of avenues for accountability, and they can come from all different areas. And to just be able to say, hey, you know what, this is how it has to be, then that can come from the manager, it can come from an assistant coach, it can come from the leadership group. It doesn't have to just be in one area. And the good, solid teams have it come from everywhere.
Yeah. So obviously they're out for a left shot defenseman. What kind of left shot defenseman would you think this organization needs? Is it someone that can move the puck, or is it someone that can defend? One of the comments I heard today was, a left shot Adam Larson. And obviously Adam Larson is a right shot, and he used to play for the organization. But is there a defenseman out there in the market? I know on Insider Trading tonight on TSN, they talked about Matt Dumba. He is obviously a righty in Minnesota, but he's interested in probably going to some Canadian teams from what it sounds like. But where do you come out on the left shot defenseman side here?
They had Adam Larson.
Yeah.
They let him get away. And they let him get away. So, you know what? Like, blunder number one. Well, geez, do you know who would be – you know who would be a really, really, really good left shot defenseman for the Oilers right now?
Not Joel Edmondson. I don't know, because he's not
– Oscar Klefbom.
Yes, no, yes, obviously, yes.
Which is really too bad. It's really too bad with the injury – that he suffered, because he would be the ideal guy and a homegrown guy. How nice would that be to have Oscar Klefbom back there, right? So, you know what? It's really interesting. I was asked this. We did the Core 4 under 24, and one of the questions I was asked about the Edmonton Oilers, can any of their prospects help them compete for a Stanley Cup this year? And I said, not on the ice, but in a trade.
Yeah.
And none of them are ready to help you on the ice. Now, there might be some that might be a little bit closer that can give you influx. So, you know what? It seems to me, Lane and Josh, the people in Edmonton are trying to work a reason not to acquire Jacob Chychrun. I think it's the most ridiculous thing going. If you have a chance to acquire Jacob Chychrun, he's young, he's good, his contract's fantastic. Like, why wouldn't you be doing it? Yeah. Why wouldn't you be doing it? Because what you want to do is you want to push along. You want to help the team push along with McDavid and Draisaitl. And there's three parts to Jacob Chychrun that I think would immeasurably help this team. Number one thing is it would take enormous pressure off of Darnell Nurse, because he's their only top pair defenseman. He is their only pillar defenseman. Jacob Chychrun can anchor a pair. So now you got two guys that can anchor a pair, right? And now, because Jacob can carry so many minutes, he can take some of the burden off of Darnell Nurse, a big burden and an offensive burden. And I think that a good power play, would become that much better with Jacob Chychrun on it. It would save Jacob Chychrun, or would save Darnell Nurse to a certain extent. Number two. Okay, so you struggle like defensively. Your goaltending's locked in for the next number of years. You're not getting a different goaltender now. So how do you lock in better defensively? Well, don't spend time in your defensive zone. Well, Jacob Chychrun can skate it out or pass it out. That gets Kulak to be a bottom pair defenseman, which is what he is.
Yes.
And, it gives some stability to, if you keep Bouchard and you keep Barry, it gives stability to them. Number three, Jacob Chychrun is a lot better defensively than people, understand. So, you know what? And the contract and everything. Yeah, you're going to have to give up good players or like prospects to get them. No kidding. But you want to ask me who the guy is? I love Matty Dumba. I love the way Matty Dumba plays. I love the way he's all in on winning. Matty Dumba can play on my team any day of the week. Why not get both of them?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I very
That's
true.
That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah.
No, That's what I'd be doing.
Yeah. I agree. Lane, you have a question there on Evander Kane you want to ask Craig?
Oh, well, I was just curious. The team toughness has been commented on a lot, and how much do you think they're missing Evander Kane right now?
Well, we saw the impact that Evander had on the team last year, the impact that he had, again, just on the overall group, and you know, he looks like he's closer to returning than not. That's a significant addition to the Oilers, not just with the skill he brings, but with the style of game that he brings, and you know, the elements that he brings. He's somebody that can make opponents uncomfortable, and I'm not even talking about fighting or anything. I'm talking about, you know, the way he plays. He's hard driving. He's going to grind you down. He's got great speed, skill. So everybody out on the ice knows when he's out there. You know, I mentioned Matty Dumba before. Matty Dumba has that ability. You imagine Matty Dumba being able to step out on the ice. Everybody's going, okay, where's Matty Dumba? Because if you don't know where Matty Dumba is, he might introduce you. He might introduce himself to you with a thundering body check. I think those are elements that help any team, and certainly Evander's return to the Edmonton Oilers lineup will be huge, huge.
Yeah. One more on the Oilers, and then we'll do a few rapid fires here before we get you out. But if they don't make the playoffs, Craig, you know, they got a lot of ground. There's a lot of season left, but it's not trending in a great direction right now. But if they don't make it, what moves would have to happen here for them to kind of figure this thing out? Obviously, you know, making that trade for Jacob Trouba, if they don't before the deadline. But, you know, the reason why I asked this is because I thought that poll last night on Skinner was a very aggressive poll. I don't think he deserved to be yanked. You know, it's two power play goals. Oilers had an opportunity to clear the puck out, and he's been pretty much your starting goaltender throughout the whole year because Campbell just hasn't found his game yet. And obviously Skinner flew back home. Congratulations to him and his wife on having their first baby. But, you know, that's two pulls in the last three starts for him. Was that a risk, you know, in a way, talking with Woodcroft, you know, maybe that green experience, the still learning that process out?
I think it's a big part. It's about standing behind the bench and knowing when your team needs a pull, and when your team doesn't need a pull. Here's what I would say. I was shocked when they pulled Stuart Skinner against the LA Kings, because there's times when you go, hey, listen, I gotta sharpen up my team here. There's times when you just say, hey, listen, you know, like, and sharpening up your team means, you know what, you better sharpen up. I'm not leaving him in there to deal with the fallout of your poor play. There's times when the goalie has to come out because he isn't good enough. I thought that the game last night, you know, was more about like, oh, we're down, our penalty killing stinks, and I'm going to blame it on Stuart Skinner.
Yeah.
That's how it felt to me.
Yeah.
It felt to me. It felt odd. It felt, you know, like to me, it was like, what were you thinking? And the one thing about Kenny Holland, and I know this about Kenny, Kenny talks to his coach every single day and talks through these things. And I think that Jay has the benefit of having somebody like Kenny around. I mean, Kenny's worked with the best. He's worked with, you know, Scotty Bowman and Mike Babcock and, you know, coaches that have a real, you know, long, successful track record. And Jay should know that too, because he was in Detroit when Kenny was there. So he would know Kenny was talking to the coach every day, and you know, it's trying to understand and trying to hear. Kenny's not going to coach the team, but he needs to understand, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing it. And okay, is this something that made sense? Is it something that didn't make sense? And all Kenny's really trying to do is make sure the team is always in the best position to have success. And number two, that the coach is learning from different things. That's what Kenny's goal is there. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was odd there. So when you ask me, you know, again, like, you know, they signed Jack Campbell this summer. It seemed like a really good signing. You know, Jack Campbell has been really poor. He's been really poor, and that's on Jack Campbell. And, you know, hindsight is great. I didn't really hear too many people saying, oh, that's a bad signing. So, you know what, don't start in on the hindsight question. You know, but he hasn't found his game. The benefit for the Oilers is Stuart Skinner has found a game, right?
Correct.
You know, so that's been good. I feel the same way about the Oilers as I do about the Vancouver Canucks. Unless the blue line, the construction of the blue line improves, the composition of the blue line improves, I don't care. We've seen what can happen with the greatness of McDavid and Draisaitl. It can only take you so far.
Yeah.
And that blue line ain't taking it to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, and we just had John Scott on. He pretty much said the same thing. He's like, McDavid can get 160, 180 points, but that's not going to put a ring on his finger if they don't address some of those core issues on the back end for sure.
Yeah.
As we started this recording, the Calgary Flames were up 3-1. It is now 3-3. There's 3 minutes left in the third period. St. Louis Blues came back. They're actually St. Louis scored, but it got disallowed for an offside. So it's still 3-3. But what's your thoughts on the Calgary Flames season to date, Craig?
Like a roller coaster, up and down. You know, again, they fall behind in this game. They get up 3-1. You know, their defense has been pretty good. You know, penalties are they're one of the most undisciplined teams in the league. And you know, a lot of what's happened to the Calgary Flames has been their own doing. I never thought that in an exchange of Tkachuk and Gaudreau for Huberdeau and Kadri, that the offense would fall off to the magnitude it did. I thought it would be relatively equal or somewhat equal, maybe not as good, but somewhat equal. It's at the bottom of the league. And everybody, and one of the things I think that the Calgary Flames need to address, I think they have a lot of empty calories in their offense. They dine out on how many shot attempts they have and how many shots on goal they get. And you know what? They don't get into the guts of the action. Their slot shots and inner slot shots are at the bottom of the league. And so if you're not going to get in there and dig in around the slot area, you're not going to score. No. And until that changes, their scoring thing is going to change. And they keep telling me all you want about all the shots on goal and the shot attempts and everything. Empty calories. They mean nothing. What matters is if football is about winning at the line of scrimmage offensively and defensively, hockey is about winning in front of the net defensively and offensively. Calgary Flames are not winning at the offensive net.
Yeah. All right. The last one, it's a two-part question. Are the LA Kings and the Seattle Kraken for real? And what do you like about the makeup of both their rosters?
I think the LA Kings are for real. I think they showed that last year, and I think they continue to get better. They're a young group. It was baptism by fire last year. I thought Rob Blake, when they had some of their injuries, it allowed some players, Sean Durzi, to really step into a role, Trevor Moore to really step up. And I think they've carried that into this season. And I think they're a team that knows how to play and expects to win. And I think that's part of growth and development. And I think the LA Kings are for real. Ron Francis in Seattle added some offense to his group. Last year, the goaltending was very subpar. This year, it's below average, but the offense has carried it. And as long as the offense can keep going and they don't run into injuries, because they don't have any depth, they don't have any offensive depth. As long as they don't run into injuries with their offensive players in Seattle, they can sustain it. But their margins when it comes to injuries are not great. And you know what? Are they outscoring their problems to a greater extent than you would expect? Yes, but that's okay. Sometimes you get on those heaters and you can do that. But when you get halfway through a season and you're continuing to have success, I mean, they're just, I thought before Christmas, there were signs maybe that they were going to dip and, you know, go into the East. They've gone to the East and rolled through there so far.
Yeah. They definitely have. All right. Well, Craig, what kind of rating would you give Lane here on his first ever podcast?
I think, you know what? How about if I hold up a number?
One. He's
no, don't tell him. He can see. I got to.
Oh, yeah, he can't see. Yeah, he can't see.
He can't see us. Oh, so yeah. That's why.
I forgot.
Listen, yeah. I did have a one. I had a one and a zero there, yeah. Which means yeah. A 10. Yeah. Right, you know, yeah. Like, you know, Lane, it would be nice if you could see us, and hopefully that glitch gets turned out, gets corrected next time. But you know what? It's what I love about interactions and you know the exchanges is the different perspectives people have. So you know, you offering a little bit different perspective, some different questions, some different ideas. It's what adds the flavor to a podcast like this. So, you know, excellent. And I hope that we get to see us the next time.
Yes. Well, so Craig, I actually, I
You don't
appreciate
have to
it.
operate behind a black screen.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you being willing to, kind of maybe go down a little memory lane and share a little bit about your journey, even to where to got that got you where you are.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun to do that. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks again, Craig. I really appreciate your time as always. It's again, it's always a pleasure, and happy to, it's great to see you back on the tube there, and watching you when you get around the NHL, and it's a true true honor, true treat to sit down and just enjoy the good talk of hockey with you. So thanks again, and if anyone wants to listen to Craig's podcast, you can find it on any of the podcast platforms, and obviously you can see him on any of the TSN channels throughout the various weeks that he's on. So I think you guys are doing a lot more CHL stuff going into the second half here, I believe, too, with TSN, right? Is
Yeah,
that
well, we're coming up with the CHL package and begins on Friday night with an OHL game, Oshawa at Kitchener. So a lot of history between those two games. The Generals beat the Rangers in the 1990 Memorial Cup. So it's fun, and you know what? We can't wait to get Bedard on the television too, because I think the fans across Canada are all looking to watch him a little bit more.
exactly. He is filling
Yeah.
up rinks across Canada, so and across the states too, because there's some USA games at that. But thanks again, Craig, and all the best to you and your family in the new year. So pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We just want to plug another sponsor who's going to join us this year. That's Brody McIntyre. He's our resident real estate agent.
The closer.
Closer, aka the closer. So Broads, give us a good ad read here of what what people can look for and how they can get a hold of you, and how long you've been in the industry for too.
Hey, we'll keep her quick, man. I've been doing this since 2004. Do 99% residential, kind of the greater Edmonton area. I work with RE/MAX, so we have the biggest market share out here. So yeah, it's a good time to be alive in real estate. Lots going on and turning to a little bit of a buyer's market, but we can help you with entry-level housing. Investments are really big right now. Rents are high, so if you want to invest, it's a great time, man. You're getting big money on rentals. So give me a shout anytime. RE/MAX Professionals, 780-777-3694.
Perfect. All right, short and sweet.
Well done, Brody.
Look at the Broads coming in the closer. So
That's a great one.
if you guys are looking at getting a hold of Broads, just give him a shout. You also can follow him on Instagram and Facebook. He's in our bio, so if you're wondering what his handle is, just look at our bio. It's in there as everyone else is.